Well, the world of technology is constantly changing, and there are always new products for us to consider. Sometimes it's new hardware, like new tablets or laptops or desktop computers, and other times, you know, the buzz is about some new software, like the new Windows 8 operating system, for example. Larry Mueller here. Lucky for us, we have Peter Green with us to answer your computer questions. He's an independent computer consultant. Comes by once a month to help us with our computer problems. And Pete, great to see you again.
Always great, Larry.
So we've got eight.
We got eight, but it's along with new hardware. So it's a hardware-software combo, and it's actually going to be an ongoing process in the next 6 months because they're releasing new Windows 8 mobile smartphones.
Yep.
And they'll be coming out with some additional tablets other than the Surface tablet that they came out with. They're getting, high marks and praises for what they've been able to accomplish. And, you know, if you think back, some of the technology has been around for a long time in terms of the touchscreens, like using touchscreen technology in restaurants. But what they're doing now is evolving the hardware, not only the tablet, but the desktop and the laptop and so forth, along with the smartphone devices, to take advantage of a new interface to their operating system. And they call it Tiles. So instead of seeing that your old, your start icon and, that's the way you go, you still have access to that, but they're giving you these what they call Metro User Interface or Tiles to launch applications or programs. Some of the other things are the Windows key now has much more importance to it because it gives you access to how to get to your desktop before instead of you, it was right in front of you.
Right.
Now, if you're using the Tile interface and you want to get to your desktop, you click, you're going to be using that Windows key more often on your keyboard. So most people probably ignored that.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's got some actual importance to it. The applications will run, in full screen mode. You can lock them so you can multitask between applications. Along with, like, Apple, they've got a Windows Store, trying to tap into that marketplace. What'll be interesting, though, is Apple's model of their store is it's kind of like Apple's mall. And you're buying a, you're paying a royalty to be in that because Apple is collecting money off of purchases. So I don't know Windows game in terms of how that's going to play out, but that's always been a more open environment than the Apple environment. Apple's always been a more of a
closed,
a control freak
versus
Windows.
True.
So I don't know the rules to that, but that'll be interesting. Windows Explorer also evolved, taking more off of like Microsoft Office and using their newer ribbon interface. The Windows Defender is now built in, so there's no like option to actually install it. It is installed.
Mm-hmm.
And they promise to not make it kind of intrusive so that it gets in the way. So there might still be a need for more assistance in terms of dealing with malware and spyware and antivirus. There are some system-wide features that are built in, like a system-wide spell check, a system-wide search, which not only ties in with your system, but also ties in with the web and the internet. Better support for multiple monitors, and you could actually set up multiple monitors where you have the new interface on one, and the old interface on the other, and you can create your you could have task bars on both monitors, which is, so that's different than what it is now. And then the security interface is not just a password; you can have other features to logging into your system, where you're swiping a screen with touchscreen capability. As far as the old hardware that's out there and upgrades, they're making an upgrade available. From if you've purchased the system from June 2nd to the 31st of January of next year, they have a special website called WindowsUpgradeOffer.com that allows you to basically, apply for and get a free upgrade.
Hmm.
So if you've made that system purchase and it's got, I guess, enough kick to it to handle And more than likely, you know, they've been, some of these companies have been planning for this release for a long time. And again, it's a, an evolution of the operating system to evolve with the newer hardware that's coming out and trying to play hand in hand with what Apple's been doing, because we're now in the third generation of the iPad and tablet device from Apple.
You know, and now it sounds like it's just more Apple-like.
Right. So whether or not corporate America embraces it and moves forward, that'll be interesting because it's going to require some hardware upgrades in terms of powering the new operating system. And if you look at the Windows experience on a desktop PC, the highest end is a 7.9 rating. To get that, you need a combination of the CPU, the monitor, the memory, the hard drive interface, and all those things. And I've never gotten a 7.9. I've gotten pretty close, but it's required some pretty darn good hardware to get to that level. If your system probably doesn't have, I'm going to say half of that, 3.5 to 4, you know, you can test your, Microsoft always puts out tools for doing upgrades. So you can always do tests and see how your system's going to do with going for an upgrade from Windows 7 to Windows 8 and see how it fits in. If you run an XP or something before, you're probably not going to enjoy that experience. And there's really no hardware to take advantage of it unless you've done enhancements. So,
as a tech guy at my daughter's grade school, loves the 8. Mm-hmm. He thinks it's just great. It's so fast and...
Yeah, a lot of people love it, and you know, especially with newer hardware, it's gonna excel. Yeah.
Milana in Troy, Michigan, has a question for you. So let's go to Milana. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, thank you. Every time my I have XP, and every time my computer does an automatic update from Microsoft, it starts to slow down. And I've been told it's because they put programs back on there that I don't need or something. Anyway, do you have any idea how I can prevent this?
One thing you could do is you could go into your control panel, and for Windows Update, you could change the setting from automatically doing it to letting you know, you know, that it's available, and then you can initiate the download yourself and observe it.
How do I know if they're putting something on there I don't need?
They usually tell you or describe to you what it is. A lot of times, the recent ones, especially with XP, will be probably malicious.
Security updates.
Security updates.
So you definitely want those.
Yeah, malicious tools where they're trying to identify security breaches and enhancements to your antivirus. If you're running Windows Defender, it'll add to its stable of what it's checking for. So part of the slowdown is that it's actually going through when you download these virus checkers, is it's going through and trying to check your system for those. So the initial download and after it's been complete, your system might experience a slowdown because it's actually doing some checking. As far as, you know, I don't remember how long they're going to be continuing to support the XP. I know they stated with like Windows 7, it's going to be, I think it was like year 2021 or some crazy number, but, with XP, the updates probably now are really just dealing with security issues. If you feel like there are things that are running in the background that might be slowing your system down, what you can do is you can click on Start and then type in, click on Start, click on Run, then type in msconfig. SYS or just msconfig and then hit enter, and then when it comes up it'll show you a startup tab, and in the startup you'll see a whole bunch of things that are either checked or not checked. There'll be a box, and what you can do is see if you can identify what some of those belong to. So for example, Google is a popular one where they'll want to continually run an update to their toolbar. Personally, I don't do that, so I uncheck that. So any of these processes that are going on underneath after you start your computer, you can write down what they are, what is checked, and then simply uncheck them and see how your system performs and see if you're missing something that you want back. One would be something like an antivirus program that you might be running. And if you're running AVG or Avast or Bitdefender or any of these other programs, you'll see some kind of reference to it, and you would not want to uncheck that. You would want to leave it checked so it's running when your system starts up.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Peter Green of InfoStar of Madison, our guest today. Thank you so much for listening in. Excuse me. If you have questions, you can join us online at an email at talk@WPR.org or on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. You can post a question or a comment there. Or, of course, you can call. And that number is 1-800-642-1234. And Gary in Bayfield has been waiting a bit, so let's go to Gary. Hi, Gary. Thank you for calling.
Yeah, hi. Thanks. I have an old white MacBook. I believe it's the SOX. And I just got an alert from Firefox saying that they can no longer install their latest stuff on that system, and they suggested that I get a new computer. My question is there something that one can get a new hard drive or rebuild part of this without getting a whole new computer, or do I have any other options? Thanks.
It might be related to the CPU that's in your MacBook. And the support the development work that they're doing on the software is not supporting the CPU that's in your system, the architecture that's the underlying force that's driving the power of your system.
Yes.
So enhancing any part of the computer won't help that.
I see.
For example, and I don't know if the MacBook that you have works with like the PowerPC CPU that they were using, which is a Motorola chip. But for example, they made a determination when they changed over to the Intel CPU platform that they were going to be doing all these enhancements to their operating system. And if you're using the PowerPC chip, some of the features that we were doing to our operating system, you would not be able to upgrade to because it wouldn't support it, as well as other applications that you wouldn't be able to upgrade to because there would be no support for that as well.
Hmm.
Very good.
And how old is your MacBook?
It's probably 3 or 4 years old.
Hmm.
That's not that old.
No.
Well, it could be a little older, too.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember in time how long ago that the power... It's got to be, I'm thinking, at least 6 years, Larry?
Yeah.
The power.
No, it's less than that.
Huh.
Hmm.
Well, maybe I'll take it to a genius the next time I'm in the cities.
Well, what you can do is, you know, if you click on the top left corner and about, it'll give you information about your Mac.
Yeah.
And you can probably do some research online and, make sure they're not lying to you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, been very helpful. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Tom in Wanakee. Hi, thank you for calling.
Good morning. See, a couple quick questions. Peter, I recently bought a Asus tablet, the Transformer tablet that they've been put out, and if I understand it correctly, that runs on an Android operating system. Will Windows 8 be compatible with that, or is it just with PC products or Windows-based products?
So in other words, you're saying would you be able to get a Windows 8 to install on your Asus tablet?
Well, as I understand it, and talking to people about Windows 8 or what the advantage is mm-hmm. that you could have it on your desktop mm-hmm. if you upgrade or you have your desktop. We recently bought a Windows 7 machine, a new PC also, and
right.
One fellow suggested, he says, you don't even want to go there because, I mean, a transition to 7 is enough going from XP, but will the Windows machine, or as I understand it, the whole idea of the Windows 8 is to have sync or compatibility with your desktop and then your other mobile items. Will that work with mobile items that aren't Microsoft type item or Microsoft operating systems?
Well, it gets into the issue of support for device drivers. So, for example, any other manufacturer's tablet, if you're going to transform it to a Windows 8 tablet, would have to have driver support for any of the hardware that's within that tablet. So that's where the question mark comes in, and that the only way to find out is to do research on that and see if, in order to do that changeover, you have to have a means of getting that stuff over to the tablet, whether it's a USB, you know, support or flash memory card that you put into the tablet, you know, in terms of getting that over to that system. That's the only way to do that.
Sure. I mean,
there has to be a conduit to get the software over to that machine to install it.
Mm-hmm.
You don't know until you contact the manufacturer or go on the manufacturer's website and see if there's a forum to ask those kind of questions or to contact tech support and, you know, simply ask them or, you know, call up an 800 number and ask them whether or not that's an option. The Android operating system is owned by Google, but it tends to be more, I would say it tends to be more open than the Windows operating system in terms of support for devices. It's almost like, I don't want to call it Linux, but it's got a Linux kind of flavor to it.
Yeah.
And I think one of the things that upset Apple was how well it was the Google apps were doing, and then they yanked them off of the iPhone. And, it's kind of like they're bullies fighting each other. But with Microsoft and Windows 8, there might be the Asus might say, hey, there's enough support out there for Windows 8, and they may make that available as a purchase from their website. You know, mm-hmm. that if you want to upgrade your Asus tablet to Windows 8, they may make it an option for you to purchase it as a download and mm-hmm. install it on your system.
There you go. There you go, Tom.
But you have to check. It's,
yep.
Because it's so new, you might even have to give it time. You know, mm-hmm. because their concern is, number one, supporting the hardware that's out there for the major manufacturers, so HP, Dell, and so forth, and then their own tablet. And then they're rolling out another version of the tablet, you know, after, I think it's like February. So, for them to say, hey, we're going to start supporting all these other tablets out there, they need help from the manufacturers, and they need interest from the manufacturers that are out there for other tablets to get that kind of support. So you might have to wait a little bit before that happens.
There you go, Tom. Thanks a lot for calling. Sue in Neshota emailed us, Pete. She says, I've been using AOL since I turned on my first computer. I now use an iPhone, and we have Wi-Fi in our home. This may be a stupid question. There's no stupid question.
No. Nope.
But do I need to continue paying for AOL, even though I only use it for email? If I cancel, will I be without service?
Well, if she's using Wi-Fi, and I'm going to make a general assumption here that the Wi-Fi, the internet connection that's coming in, is from another internet service provider.
Right.
The answer would be that you can cancel your AOL account and in terms of internet access, which sounds to me that she had initiated AOL as a dial-in service.
Yeah.
And, just contact them, make sure that, you know, the email is not canceled, because I believe from everyone that I've known that's used AOL that the email account is still valid and people still use their email account, but they've canceled their AOL service because they don't use it for internet access. So I would just Just make sure, you know, when you do cancel it, that you're not wiping out your email account, because there might be some I haven't personally done it, but there might be some like
fine
box
print
that you have to, you know, you want to get rid of everything, any evidence that you've ever been here, kind of thing. Because I know you can do it with some of the social media and online dating services, where you say, hey, you know, get me off of here. I'm gone. I don't want to be ever seen again. Yeah. And you know what? You're gone.
Yeah.
And they warn you. They tell you, you know, you check this and you really want to be gone,
you're gone.
You're gone. And it ain't coming back.
Rob on Facebook says, I have our home computer set up with users for each of my children running XP. On two of the users, the taskbar with the start button is missing. How do I go about making that visible again? And what are the kids doing to make it disappear?
It might be that it's just dragged off of the screen.
Yeah, I don't even know how you get rid of it.
Because, you know, if you go all the way to the bottom, they're talking about the taskbar that's all the way across the bottom.
Yeah.
It might actually just have to be, if you go to the edge and then pull it back up, because you can actually move that around. You can move it to the right. You can move it to the left. You can drag it up to the top. So it might simply be that it's there, and you just have to go to the edge and just pull it back up.
Lou in Milwaukee emailed.
Because you can hide it. You can hide it.
Yeah.
I mean, so it sounds to me like it's just hidden. You got to pull it back up in a view.
Lou in Milwaukee emailed, Firefox won't update anymore because my iMac is still running 10.5. You can't update to the new OS without 10.6, which isn't available anymore. So I'm not sure what to do here. Will the Apple Store have this? Will I have to pay for two upgrades to get the current version?
Well, if your system supports, you know, whatever is currently available, I mean, it'll go through the upgrade process, skipping any versions in between. If your hardware doesn't support it, it won't allow an install. I mean, no. It just doesn't. Same thing, Windows or Apple won't allow you to install anything that they can't support. So as related to, you know, Firefox upgrade, if it's prompting you to upgrade to the next level of the OS, even though that next level is not available, if the one after that is and your system supports it, that's where you're going to have to upgrade to.
Peter Green of Infostar.com. Our guest, I'm Larry Mueller. Amanda Magnus, our on-air producer here today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Taking a look at your computer with Peter Green of Infostar.com. Great to have him along. Thank you so much for listening in. Questions? Join us at 1-800-642-1234 or email us at talk@wpr.org. Or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Love to hear from you. Joe in Franklin is online, Pete, so let's go to Joe. Hi, Joe. Thank you for calling.
Good morning, Larry and Peter.
Hi.
You know, your show is great, except you sometimes ignorance is bliss. You bring up topics, and then I start worrying about them. but anyway, I was just wondering about temp files. There seems to be just a whole slew of them on my computer. Should I worry about them, delete them? Do they disappear when I reboot, which I never do?
Temp files, interesting question. Temp files are assigned by Microsoft in a number of different ways. One is through the installation of software, and one is simply through the act of browsing and interacting with the web. Another one is with email and downloading of files, picture files, attachments, and so forth. So the general rule is if you're going to, if you get email attachments and you really want to save something, save it so you know where it is, so it's not assigned any like temporary area on your system. If you're interacting with the web, if there's, you know, pictures that you want to save or video you want to save, if you're prompted to, just make sure you know where you're saving it. And then what you can use is you can use programs like CCleaner, or you can use Windows itself and do a cleanup. And what it will do is it will go out there and identify the temporary files that your system has, I don't want to say created, but has found a place for, a placeholder, and it will identify those files, and it will take them, it will delete them off of your system so that they're no longer occupying space and building and size, so that at some point in time it becomes an issue. The other thing is, as temporary files grow bigger and bigger, not saying that the system becomes fragmented, in some cases it does, but because those files occupy more and more space, if you're trying to install software, sometimes they get in the way, sometimes they make the system behave sluggish. So periodically cleaning up temporary files is always a good PC housekeeping thing to do. And there are tools out there that just make it easier for you to do that. So you can either go into, I usually use CCleaner to do that.
Yeah.
It's a popular free utility. We've talked about using it for a long time, and it's just C and then Cleaner. If you do search for it, the company is called Piriforms, PIRIFORMS. They ask for a donation if you like using it. I think you can get support from them if you want. And usually what it'll do is you run an analysis, and it'll show you what it's going to do, and it interacts with your different web browsers. It'll interact with some of your Windows applications. It'll tell you what it's removing. And it's just a good way to refresh your system.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
All right.
So hopefully that helps.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Dave in Green Bay passed along the information that Mozilla is working on a Firefox update that will work on older Apple computers. Hmm. Oh, that's kind of nice to know. That's in response to the caller who asked.
So if you don't want to upgrade,
yeah,
and you can wait around, and
yeah,
it's just a matter of tapping into seeing how long it's going to be.
Yep. Penny in Waupaca. Thanks for calling. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I have under a 2-year-old Gateway computer that the motherboard has gone out on. And my question is, if I spend the money to replace the motherboard, is that pretty much like getting a new computer, or would you not waste the money?
How much do they want for that?
$200. Is there much else that can go wrong after the motherboard is replaced?
Well,
there's always something.
Yeah, the motherboard or the system board has got the CPU on it. It's got the memory plugged into it. Might have the video built into it. Might have the network interface for being tapped into your router or your cable, how you're getting your internet signal.
Right.
The hard drive, if you got a DVD player and all those things.
It is. It's an all-in-one touchscreen thing.
It kind of becomes, if you... The issues you're confronted with are, do I spend the $200... upgrade or change the system board and it works with everything put back in place, you don't have to do anything else to it, versus comparing it to a new PC box, which might be, I'm just going to throw something out there, I don't know the specs on your system. So what you'll have to do is compare the specs of your 2-year-old system with how much of a CPU what kind of CPU you have, what it's rated in terms of speed, how much memory you have.
Right, and those aren't that important to me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking it would cost me another $400 or $500.
Well, what I was going to say is you look at what your system has and what the cost is to repair it versus a system that might be probably in the $300 to $400 range, and what the specs are being offered today, mm-hmm. and having an additional year warranty on all the components. The only question you're going to have is, okay, is it worth spending that little extra getting a new system, but then you have to transfer over whatever programs you have and yep. data over to the new system, and there will probably be a cost associated with that.
Exactly.
So,
there is.
Yeah. yep.
So it's kind of a, it's...
Do you feel that it could be successfully done, replacing the motherboard?
Oh, I'm absolutely. The only thing is there's no guarantee on the other components.
Okay.
Yep.
So that's where the trade-off becomes in terms of, okay, I put this money in it. You know, it's just like it's like any other appliance, anything else that you own that has wear and tear on it. You get to a point where, you know, you're fixing things on a car and it starts to bother you that, okay, I did this, and then in 2 months now I'm doing this. And there's no warranty, you know, on an ongoing basis. On the other things that you replace, yes. But as you move forward, as other things fail, there isn't.
Mm-hmm.
So at some point in time, you have to make a decision. A system board is a fairly large, invasive change to a system because, like I said, you have all the other pieces to it that are being dealt with. And typically, they're not going to replace the memory. They're just going to swap it out.
Right.
And they're taking the entire system apart, putting the board back in, putting all the components that may hook into it or obviously are part of it. The video might be built into it or it may not be. And then the hard drive is being reinterfaced to it. There might be glitches with that, and they may come back and say, hey, we had to do this extra work to get your hard drive to work with it.
Yep.
So you have to make sure that, okay, if it's going to cost you $200, is that it?
Mm-hmm.
You know, is that the final price that I'm paying? You know, I don't, you know, if you have glitches with getting my hard drive and my operating system back up and running, are you going to come back and charge me for that? Because then you could start having extra bills.
That's a good question.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay.
Good luck, Penny.
Thank you very much.
Yep, good luck.
Appreciate it. Peter Green of InfoStar.com, our guest, Bernard in Milwaukee. Thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi, good morning, gentlemen.
Hi.
I've got a question regarding a Vista. I keep getting the same list of 8 window updates to be installed, and the list does get installed, and then about an hour later, the icon comes up again saying that there's new updates are available, and these are the same ones. New updates are available and downloaded, but the same list keeps appearing over and over.
Well,
that's frustrating.
Yeah. I would probably do a search. And personally, I don't use Vista anymore. I kind of skipped over that when it became available because it was the Windows operating version that shouldn't have been released. And I would recommend, if you can at all possible, to upgrade to Windows 7.
Be a lot happier.
It's probably some kind of bug, and it might be because of the manufacturer's computer that you're on, and something's glitching with Microsoft's update. There's something that's not hitting on all cylinders.
I did contact the manufacturer, mm-hmm. and their manufacturer's rep advised not updating to Windows 7 because of some hardware relationship that might occur. So these are the same update I think for Windows. These are Microsoft.NET Framework 4.
Hmm.
Same list of 8.
Yeah, what you may want to do is take down what updates it's trying to do,
mm-hmm.
and rather than trying to do it through Windows running the updates, you may want to do some research and finding out how to get those updates on your system without going through the Windows update process. In other words, you can download the files that you need to actually perform the update, but doing it independently of the Microsoft calling for it through the operating system.
And how do I eliminate the list that's already installed of the same updates?
You can go into the Windows update and you can right mouse click,
mm-hmm.
and either you have a number of options to either hide it and not have it ask for it anymore. So if you go into the Windows update and you right mouse click on the updates, mm-hmm. you should be able to make choices where you can hide them so it won't show you them anymore.
So the fact that they're hidden does not hinder the performance of the unit.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Sounds reasonable.
All right. Thanks a lot, Rick.
I would give that a try.
Yep. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Chris in Elk Mound. Hi.
Hello.
Hi.
What's on your mind?
I've got a computer I've purchased recently. I bought it this summer because my other computer got hit by lightning.
Oh.
Right now I've got it just gave me this today, Windows 7. It says this copy of Windows is not genuine.
Hmm.
It wanted me to run an activation, but it's going through all this. It's trying to make me jump through a bunch of hoops. I enter, you know, it wants me to enter in my activation code, which is on a sticker on the computer here.
Right.
Thing is, I bought this summer used from a local computer repair shop.
Okay.
I had problems with it, and I just had it back into them. They said that they had to reload Windows 7 onto it.
Hmm.
And, you know, when I do that, then they have to transfer all my data and every, you know, all the software that I've downloaded doesn't get put back on again. And, you know, they won't do all that for me. So it's, I'm not really sure what's going on here.
Well, what's going on with the request for the activation is whatever they did when they reinstalled Windows 7 is that they installed like maybe a corporate version of the Windows 7.
Uh-huh.
And if they didn't validate the install and they didn't give you the proper activation code, even though you might have it on your PC, it's not going to be what Microsoft is expecting to see. So they're prompting you probably to go to a website to run through the validation.
Right.
And you can either do that and it will come through and authenticate it and say you're okay, or you're going to have to go back to that shop and ask them, you know, to help you to validate it.
Okay.
Those are your two options. So whenever Microsoft is doing this, like, push-pull communication with the system, it's typically prompting you to go to one of their websites, and then they have this thing that they do to interact with your system to check it. And if it comes back and says, hey, you're still not validated, then the option is you have to go back to the shop and say, help me validate this because I'm in this loop of it's telling me it's not valid.
Yep.
And you worked on it and you installed it, so you need to help me validate it.
Yep, there you go. Good luck, Chris. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Peter Green of Infostar.com, our guest today. Here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. So great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Larry Mueller. My guest today as we talk your computer and your computer issues, Peter Green of Infostar.com. He comes by once a month to help with your personal computer problems, and I hope you'll join in if you have a question or a comment. Here's where you call. It's 1-800-642-1234. You can also email us at talk@wpr.org, or you can go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. You can post a question or a comment there. And Pete, we're going to go to Eau Claire next. Deborah's online. Deb, thank you for calling. Hi.
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 It's so much fun to listen to somebody that's so smart. I just envy you so much.
Thanks.
My question is, I'm using XP. I've been using XP for 10 years, and I love it. But I'm getting to the point where I think I'm going to need a new machine, and I'm afraid to get a new machine with Windows 7 or 8 on it because I was told that the new programs won't read all my old XP documents, and that's got me in a panic because I have so many documents that I still need access to.
When you say documents, are you talking about word processing?
Right.
You shouldn't have a problem with pulling in, you know, old Word documents.
So the new Word systems will read the old ones?
Mm-hmm. In fact, if you want to do a test, you might want to take a look at Google, Google Docs, and you could probably pull them into Google and use them within Google's system.
And then what? And then save them back to my new system if I get one?
It just depends on, in terms of the type of investment when you make in a system. I know Microsoft Office is typically Word, Excel, PowerPoint.
Yeah, and I'm not nuts about WordPerfect either, but that's a whole other matter.
Right, but what I'm saying is if you need that kind of horsepower, then you need to make that kind of investment. But if you don't, if you're just using it for, writing, but not really doing a lot of crazy things, Gmail and Google Docs has a lot to offer, and it's all online, and you can access it from any system,
anywhere.
Okay, so use that instead of my home computer for my word processing, you're saying?
No, I'm just saying look at it in terms of if you're concerned about the portability or transferability of your old files
into
a new system.
Yeah.
Just simply looking at what Google has with their Google Docs program and just import it or upload it into their system. So get a Google Gmail account.
Yeah, I have one.
Okay. And then just take one of the files and open it with Google Docs and see how it works.
And if it works there, it'll work with the new Windows 8.
Yeah, it'll. Yes.
Oh.
Yeah, and plus, if you look at the Microsoft Word or whatever word processing you're using, and I'm sure it's Word, but when you go to save as, there are always options as to what kind of file to save it as.
Yes.
So unless you're doing some really crazy things and you want to make it you want to make it as simple as possible, you can always change the format that the file is saved in. So that, for example, used to be an issue when you were saving files that were working between Macs, Apple Macs, and PCs, that you only had certain options to save it for a Mac file so that it would be readable on an Apple computer. But if you saved it in a different format, it wouldn't transfer over too well to an Apple. So when you do a save as, you can always change. You can open up the file and save as a Word 95 or whatever version you're using. And then when you go to open it up on the new system, if you invest in Microsoft Office and it has Word, it'll identify that file as being owned by your older software. It just depends on how much you're doing to that file. Some people do a lot of elaborate work, and some just simply do, bold and italicized and don't have a bunch of other things going on with it.
Okay. Well, I'm writing a book, so it's mostly text.
Okay. Yeah. If you're writing a book, Microsoft Word works well. There are other programs out there that, will allow you to be more creative with the output. I know Adobe makes their InDesign software and Adobe Acrobat to create the finished product. But I think it was with this last version of the Microsoft Office products that they now export out as a PDF file.
That would be good.
But if you are going towards the online version of a book, the EPUB format is something that you should research because the EPUB, I believe it's now EPUB 3, allows you to have a more multimedia interactive experience with the user.
Oh.
So if you're looking at that kind of content where you want to put video in and do some other multimedia things to it, you should look at the EPUB, just research EPUB 3, and you'll see there's a whole nother world out there with what's going on with the publishing experience.
Okay.
All right. There you go, Deb.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. We're talking about PC and Apple interface. I think Mike in Madison's got a question relating to that. Mike, hi.
Hi. I've got a MacBook Pro and a Windows machine, and I'd like to know if I could use them on a same network. I'm kind of new to all this, so bear with me. But I've got a on the Windows side, it's a Windows 7 professional software, and I've got a network media player by Sony.
Okay.
And it segues with my TV just fine. And then on the Mac side, MacBook Pro, and I'm considering either just being able to view and listen to what comes up on the computer via a HDMI cable directly to the TV,
right.
Or is like something like the Apple TV a good alternative for
well,
the Apple thing?
Well, in terms of, you know, network compatibility, the IP ad, when you set up the router in your home or business, you have basically like a gateway number that all of them coexist on, and then they all have their own addresses. If it's in a work group environment, they're given all the same work group names so they can all see each other. But they can all only see each other with as much as you're allowing to be shared. So if you don't allow your Mac to be shared, or if you don't allow your Windows 7 PC or any other device to be shared, then even though you can see them, you won't have accessibility. So what you need to do is establish maybe a folder on each computer that can be shared, and then you can transfer between each system. As far as the interface to the TVs, you know, like Apple TV, and then there's Roku, and then there's, a, I believe, a Google TV device. Those are all interfacing to an individual TV. You can't really interface across the network from a Google TV device or an Apple TV device to a whole bunch of a whole bunch of TVs at the same time. You have to be able, you're plugged into that HDMI cable is going to one device. It's not going to multiple devices.
Yeah, I wasn't interested in that. Yeah.
Right. So that's where that interface comes into play. But as far as moving things between devices, they'll all see each other as long as you're using the same gateway address, and then you're setting them up to share folders on each machine, and you're allowing permission for other users to gain access to them.
Okay, great.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling.
And that's always the tricky part, is that even though they're on the same network, they still have to have the same gateway address, so they're all coexisting, and that typically is set up with the router. And then you have to make sure that each device is allowing permission to gain access to it. And that's not a default setting. That's something that you have to actively make sure that, you know, you're doing.
Yeah.
Otherwise, they don't talk.
Julie in Milwaukee. Hi. Are you there?
Yes, hello.
Yes,
I am. Thank you. Hi. I actually have two questions. One question has to do with my C drive was extremely full, and I think I have about 10% free. So the person who made my computer for me, he built it from his home. He made two extra partitions, a D drive and an F drive. And so I thought because my C drive was so full, I'd move all of my my music files into my D drive, and in doing so, my computer has shut down, and it's got a message on the screen that says, "Please load the boot disk." And the person who built it for me, and unfortunately was a friend that I'm not talking to, I haven't talked to in years, and I sent him an email, and he hasn't responded. I didn't get a boot disk from him. And the files that were made to build the computer are on a F drive, meaning files drive. So that's a partition with all of that. So I'm wondering, do I need to completely reformat? Am I at that particular place?
Hmm. Wow, that's there's a lot there, and we've got about 20 seconds to answer, or we can pick it up later here.
Well, one is the option would be, for me, I would take that if you're having problems booting off of that drive, is I would take the drive out of the system and put it in a, either a way to hook it up to another computer to pull the files off of it. And then by removing the files off of the D drive, if that, in fact, did create the problem, you could free those up, put the drive back in the system, and see if it comes back up.
Ah, good piece of advice. Peter Green of Infostar.com, our guest. He's with us right up until 12:30 today here on the Ideas Network. Stay with us. With so many of us using computers every day at home or work or both, we rely on them a lot, and we rely on Peter Green as well. He's an independent computer consultant, comes by the first Monday of every month to talk with us about our computer issues. Pete, always great. Thanks for spending time with us again today.
My pleasure, Larry.
And you always come by with a top 10 list of great online sites. And what have you got for us today?
Well, they're all posted. You go to Infostar.com, the top 10 archives, scroll down to today's date, or click on the current top 10, and they're all there. First one is drugabuse.gov, and it's by the National Institutes of Health, and it is very comprehensive resource our government's put up about the science of drug addiction. There's a lot there to explore. This next one is a useful classroom tool, and it's basically a sticky canvas service that uses a web browser, and it's called Linoit, Linoit.com. The next one, if you haven't enjoyed it, because they said they've been around since 1967, is profootballweekly.com, and a very comprehensive website and coverage of the National Football League. Probably useful for people who do fantasy football. Number four, another government site to help you be safe, secure, and responsible online, and it is called onguardonline.gov. And it's nice to see the federal government using domain names to promote web resources.
Mm-hmm.
It's really, for me, a personal, if you want to call it, bugaboo when I see companies using this /.whatever.
Yeah.
Because the cost of a domain name, if you really to make an investment in making something easy to remember, is anywhere from, let's say, typically $10 a year.
Yeah.
To just create a very simple, you know, phrase or web domain name to promote versus, you know, stating something's /.
Yeah,
whatever.
Yeah.
Anyhow, it's good to see the government taking advantage of that. Number five is tradepub.com, and it's pretty amazing. It's apply to access for free trade magazine subscriptions and technical document downloads. You can browse through their extensive list of free business, computer, engineering, and trade magazines, white papers, ebooks, and so forth to match your skills. It's really very comprehensive. Number six is called hostzilla.net, and it's a free website that gives you 100 meg of space, and if you need more, then it's going to cost you, but that's pretty good to get started with for free. I think this one is pronounced, I'm not sure. I'm just going to spell it, knoji.com. I don't know how they come up with these names, but its goal is to become a resource where consumers can research companies before making a purchase. So, you know, reviews and
consumer reports type.
Correct. Number eight is a TripAdvisor company, and it's called Tingo, TINGO.com. And it claims to be the only website that automatically rebooks you at the lower rate if your hotel drops its price.
Huh.
I don't know the truth to that, but it claims that's what it will do. Number nine is automotiveaddicts.com. Since 2005, created for auto enthusiasts of all types, lots there. And this last one, I discovered it as an app on my iPhone, but it's called healthtap.com, and it's a very useful healthcare medical resource to help you find answers to health medical questions. And what I just suggest doing is going to their site, typing in a question you might have of a condition, and just see all the things that come back and how you can tap through the answers and see how it might help you answer some questions.
Yeah, perfect. And all of those, of course, are on your Infostar.com Facebook page. Yep. I'm sorry, web page.
Yep. I haven't done the Facebook, Larry, because to be honest with you, I'd probably go pretty nuts.
Understood.
It'd take too much time.
Chris in Milwaukee has a question for you. Hi, Chris.
Hi. I'm going to state a problem, then a tentative solution, and then three questions, and then please tell me if my thinking is flawed.
Okay.
Here's my problem. I have many, many files on many 3-inch magnetic diskettes. Increasingly, when I walk up to a public computer at, say, a library, I'm less and less able to find a computer that accepts the small, square, floppy diskettes.
Okay.
My tentative solution is I noticed a reference librarian once showed me a small box-like device. At one end, it accepts a diskette, and the other end has what looks like a tail, and the other end looks like a flash drive. And this is a small portable device that you can plug into a computer, and it allows you to, read a small square floppy diskette on a machine that does not have a slot for that. My question is such a device still manufactured? How do I find it? What should I expect to pay? Should I stay away from a used model? And is a device that small and simple ever vulnerable to a virus?
As far as trying to find something like that, I would probably look at like three places. If it's sold new, I would look at buy.com or tiger.com. And the other option would be to go on eBay and do a search for, you know, a device like that. How many of these 3.5-inch discs do you have?
Hundreds.
So, and there, I take it they all have date on them, or pictures, or
Illustrations, uh-huh. And also animations. And I have a wonderful old computer that mm-hmm. I use to create content.
Okay.
And I have no internet access, and have no interest in getting internet access.
How old is the computer?
I have an Omnitek Windows 95. By the way, I know where I can go and look at a device and copy down the serial numbers. Once I've got that, does that tell you how I could find one? Another thing I thought about is going around to various computer stores, handing them the serial number information and giving them contact information and saying, if you ever see one of these, contact me. Does that make sense?
More than likely, you'll probably be able to find it online. But what I would do is I would get, you know, an external floppy device and start transferring those over to probably, you can get 500 gig or 1 terabyte hard drives and start moving those files over so that they're in one location. And then your options expand in terms of being able to back it up to other media or another external hard drive so you don't have just one copy, or having a DVD and burning, you know, you can burn anywhere from 4+ gig to a dual layer, which will give you 8 to 9 gig of storage space, which is probably more than what you'll need for, you know, even though you have hundreds of floppies, you're still... If you had 100 1.44 meg floppies, you're still, you know, within 1 to 2 gigs of storage. So you're going to be putting that on a single-sided DVD drive. So, you know, if you just multiply that out and say you have 400, you're going to be able to store everything you have on just single-sided 3 to 4 DVDs.
And would that device that you're talking about, it's called a 500 gig drive.
Mm-hmm.
Would that be compatible with an old computer, such as something that runs on Windows 95?
Well, that's the thing. Windows 95, in terms of support for USB, you're going to have to look into that and see if that's possible, because most of the drives that are out now are going to be USB, at least 2, if not 3.0. And you're going to have to see if there are any patches available for Windows 95. Plus, I don't know if the hardware that you have would even have a USB interface to it.
Yeah.
Probably does not.
Right. So the option for transferring is probably best served by either what they have or they've used in the past these cables, which can plug into your parallel port, and they're I remember using some of these a long time ago where you plug into the parallel port and you're able to transfer files. The other option would be to put in a network card in your PC and to hook it up to a network attached storage device, which would not only have the hard drive storage in it, but you can get them with USB ports on those as well.
Yep.
But
there you go.
You have the network support, and then you're relying on that device to provide you with the USB support.
Good luck, Chris. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Albert in Milwaukee, your turn. Hi.
How you doing?
Good. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
I've got a laptop problem. I have a HP. It's about 3 years old. It's a G61 model. But my problem is, I press the on button and nothing pops on the screen. The Windows operating system logo doesn't pop on. Only thing that lights up is the LED light that's at the left-hand corner, the battery light.
Okay.
And it's like a lightning sign.
Right.
That lights up.
Okay.
But it's like another icon, like three CDs
right
next to it.
Okay.
That doesn't pop on.
All right.
Before this problem happened, it was another problem when it said maybe like 1, 2, 3, I want to say about 3 different things connected to the BIOS system or something like that.
Okay.
BIOS or something. But after that problem, like I say, it just went completely black. I got a recommendation from a semi-pro, but I think he's kind of like a guesser, and I'm not trying to get no guesswork right now.
Okay.
I've dealt with him in the past, and he has, you know, successfully fixed some things for me on the computer, but he said something about a chip needs to get soldered in there, some new chip he needs to get ordered or whatever. But I did go to a professional, and he said it might be the power supply.
Okay.
Well, I know my battery was going dead,
okay,
but I'm not sure exactly.
Let me ask you a couple of questions. Number one,
right,
have you removed the battery and plugged in the computer, and it does not start up?
It does not start up.
So without the battery in it, you have no life to it.
Exactly.
Okay. In that case, what I would be looking at before doing any, you know, exploratory work on the computer, my first goal would be to remove that hard drive and put it in a kit, or whether or not you have somebody else do this or you do it yourself, is you get a kit for that type of hard drive and plug it into a system that is a similar operating system so that you could, you know, back up the data if you have not already backed up the data.
Okay.
My main concern when a computer fails, it's always a challenge to get back where you were when it last worked. That's the most frustrating thing, is I want it back to where it was. Well, part of that is making sure you got all your data files, which can be, you know, pictures, music, could be email and so forth. But if you don't have that data accessible to another computer by any other means, in other words, you haven't backed it up yet, your primary goal should be to remove that hard drive, get it into a kit to interface it to another system so that you could at least try and back up your data. After that, if you're not getting any life, it could be a power supply. It could be memory. There are a variety. Usually, laptops give you some kind of signal when things are out. If they're not giving you any beeps and they're only showing like certain things lit, sometimes those are symbols of what works and what does not work. In other words, it's giving you that information, but you have to know how to decipher it. So you may have to contact the manufacturer and say, look, I've removed the battery, I'm powering it up, and this is all that I have. Now, hopefully they'll tell you that it might be this or it might be that, or they'll say you need to send it in. If it's out of warranty, they'll probably tell you there might be some base charge to look at it and then tell you how much it's going to cost to repair it. But if you don't have any backups and you send that in, your system is at risk for having that drive wiped out.
Yeah.
So the main goal is getting the data off of that first, then trying to interpret what it's telling you when it can't start up with all those lights and so forth. And if you can't get that, then it needs to be serviced by some. You can try pulling out the memory and seeing if it creates life or not. If it creates life, then you know the memory is bad. Sometimes that happens.
Yep.
But usually there's a different kind of error message where it beeps at you or it shows you something on the screen.
Good luck, Al. Thank you very much for calling. And Dave in Appleton, thank you for calling. Hi, what's on your mind?
Good morning, thanks. Kind of a minor annoyance, I suppose, but this is a Firefox question. If I exit out of Firefox, maybe by mistake or something, and try to get back into it 5 minutes later, I have to go to Task Manager every time, shut it down or end process, and then go back in. And it's just, and I've checked all of the plugins, I've disabled some of them, but it's just slow.
Yeah.
And if I'm trying to do CCleaner on it after a day, then I have to do the same thing.
Have you tried to do an uninstall and reinstall on it?
Firefox? Yep. No, I haven't.
Okay. What I would probably, and is it the latest version?
I think I'm up to date, yeah.
Okay. What I would probably do then is, you know, make sure you, you know, save your bookmarks, you know, so you know where they are.
Uh-huh.
And I would probably do an uninstall and then reboot the system a couple of times after you've done the uninstall, run CCleaner on it, and then try a fresh install and see if that makes any, you know, if that helps. Sometimes.
What about all those plugins? Will I lose all that stuff, or is that automatic when I reinstall?
It'll prompt you for them.
Oh.
And if it needs to re-download or if it finds them, it'll locate them.
Uh-huh. All right, give it a try.
All right.
Sometimes plugins create issues too.
Yeah.
Because plugins are other party programs that are interfacing to Firefox, and sometimes those are the guilty parties.
There you go, Dave. Michael in Dousman. Hi. Thanks for calling.
Hi. I have a problem that just started recently, and I have four ideas of what might have caused it. But I get this, I'm running a Windows 7 professional unit, and I get this Windows error recovery window, and it's Windows failed to start. A recent hardware or software change might be the cause. And then it tells me to try, or if there's, let me read it, if window files have been damaged or configured incorrectly, startup repair can help diagnose and fix the problem. It doesn't. I've done it so many times. If the power was interrupted during a startup, choose start Windows normally. So I can get back into my system by just choosing start Windows normally, but I get this pop-up window all the time. So the four things that might have caused this to happen, we did have a brownout not too long ago. I am not 100% sure whether the computer was on or not, but what I normally do when that happens is I shut everything down and unplug it because we had a big electrical storm a while back. The other thing I did is I have Spider 3 for monitor color adjust. I had that on there. I readjusted it for that. I downloaded an upgrade for Spider 3, and then I took the thing off and you know left it you know let it correct the color automatically. The other thing I'm doing right now is I have Adobe Bridge 6 trial on there, and I was doing something in Adobe Bridge, and I don't know, I hit something up in the upper right corner, and the whole thing locked up. And it locked up for a long time, and then eventually it repaired itself or did something. The last thing is I installed a USB 3 card reader for, so I can use my external hard drives using USB. And sometimes I take a USB off my other system, which is an XP system, and I leave it plugged in, but I plug in the USB into the second USB 3 port so that I can transfer pictures instead of doing it on the XP, which has only USB 2. So those are the four things that, that possibly have caused this, and I don't know. I've tried startup repair. System restore seems to be a big problem. Every time you do a system restore, especially an XP, I don't know. I've never done it on this computer. I'm afraid to. That's one of the options. The other is system image recovery, which I don't really know exactly what that does. And Windows memory diagnostic, command prompt, and then Dell data safe restore emergency backup.
So how long have you had the problem with the system?
Oh, about a week and a half, maybe a week, week and a half.
Okay. One of the things that is, if you do have restore system restore running on your system, and you said it's been about a week, week and a half, and you're okay with, you know, dealing with the spider, the Adobe Bridge, and the USB card reader being added to your system, I would see if I could go back to a date, maybe a week prior, if you can. To when you had the issue and do a system restore. I've had good luck with system restore on Windows 7 machines, so that's one thing I would try. If not, I would probably run something like CCleaner and clean up the system registry. I don't know if you've attempted to do that, but...
Well, I do have Dell... I got the thing on. I can't tell you what it is, but it's a Dell system that does like PC Mechanic.
Okay. Well, I would just make sure that you run a registry cleaner to get it, you know, make sure it's tidied up.
There you go. Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. And Pete, boy, we're out of time.
Always goes fast.
Oh, man, it goes fast. Thank you so much. You'll come back first Monday of
December.
December.
Yeah.
Man, oh, man. Peter Green of Infostar.com. Check out his website at Infostar.com, and you'll get that top 10 list and a whole lot more. And don't forget, tomorrow night at 7, join us for a special election coverage. We begin the evening with an hour of expert analysis, and then at 8, we bring you results, candidate interviews, and a whole lot more. So that's tomorrow night. And tomorrow at 11, we'll get a different perspective on the Civil War, talking with the editors of a collection of letters written home by a Wisconsin soldier. Stay with us.